Metro Manila residents begin receiving Russia's Sputnik V vaccines. We'll get live updates from our correspondents on the ground. President Rodrigo Duterte gets inoculated with China's Sinopharm shot. An infectious diseases expert sees the possibility of the further downgrading of the modified lockdown in Metro Manila after May 14. Later on in the program, we'll talk to the spokesperson of the Philippine General Hospital on how they're affected by the declining COVID-19 numbers in the national capital region. And President Duterte denies making any campaign promises on Manila's maritime dispute with Beijing. Hi, I'm Carlina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. The Philippines kicking off its rollout of Russia's Sputnik V. That's the latest COVID-19 vaccine to be available in the country. Five cities in Metro Manila are inoculating residents with jabs Tuesday. Manila, Makati, Muntinlupa, Taguig, and Parañaque each received 3,000 doses of the vaccine. A big challenge will be administering the doses within 30 minutes since the shots have a low temperature requirement. Philippine Health Secretary Francisco Duque III leads the rollout of Russia's Sputnik V vaccine in the city of Manila. Jerome Lantin now joins us with the details. Jerome, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Carmina. After receiving 3,000 doses of a Russian-made Sputnik V vaccine yesterday, Manila LGU is already administering the first dose for healthcare workers or those included in the A1 priority group here today at the Santa Ana Hospital. The initial 15,000 doses of Sputnik V arrived in the country over the weekend, and Manila is one of the five cities in NCR to have been allotted doses. Other cities received 3,000 doses each are Makati, Taguig, Parañaque, and Muntinlupa. The 15,000 doses will be a trial phase as to how its storage will be handled and kept at negative 18 degrees, which is more sensitive compared to Sinovac and AstraZeneca. And that is a challenge being faced by the Manila Health Department to administer the vaccine not more than an hour after it is brought out of storage. The vaccination is being done here in Santa Ana Hospital, which also serves as a storage facility of Manila. As of 10 a.m., around 200 healthcare workers who are pre-registered have come here to get their first jab. Earlier, Health Secretary Francisco Duque was here to supervise the vaccination of the first dose of Sputnik V in Manila, and he also personally administered the vaccine to one of the hospital's staff. And that's the latest here in Manila. Back to you, Carmina.
Yeah, Jerome, just one question for you before I let you go. So you say the challenge there is to administer within 30 minutes or at least not over an hour. How are they able to surmount this challenge?
Carmina, the storage facility here in Manila is also here in Santa Ana Hospital. So what they did, instead of bringing the vaccines to the other vaccination sites, for example, schools or other hospitals, those who are getting their first jab are asked to come here so that there won't be a need for the vaccines to be transported.
All right. Thanks a lot. Jerome Lantin there joining us live from the city of Manila. Keep safe, Jerome. Take care. On to more news. The iconic gym of UP's College of Human Kinetics in Quezon City is now converted into a vaccination center. There, employees and members of the UP community are getting their first COVID-19 vaccine jab. Our correspondent Adrian Ayala now joins us with more details. Adrian, go ahead.
Yes, Carmina, the University of the Philippines Diliman Gymnasium was converted into a COVID-19 vaccination facility for university workers as well as other members of the community. According to UP Diliman Vice Chancellor Aleli Bawagan, the vaccination center is manned by qualified volunteers, including university alumni, community residents, as well as interns from the Philippine General Hospital. The in-campus vaccination program, which uses Sinovac vaccines, aims to decongest vaccination centers in Quezon City and to speed up the process of achieving herd immunity. The program targets members of the UP community who were surveyed in February and March and follows national government guidelines of vaccinating those under the A2 or senior citizens and A3 or persons with comorbidities categories. Bawagan said Quezon City Mayor Joy Belmonte assured them of vaccine supply as long as the recipients are either residents or working within the city. Among those who volunteered Carmina as vaccination personnel are UP Diliman College of Business Administration instructor Brian Placido and UP Manila Physical Therapy graduate and private practitioner Athena Marcelo, who are more than willing to serve their community. Carmina?
Okay, Adrian, just a clarification there. So this vaccination center will cater to all the members of the UP community. But you just said a while ago that Mayor Joy Belmonte made a clarification as well, or at least a qualification, that you must be a member of the UP community and also a resident of Quezon City.
Yes, Carmina, on the first point that you made, yes, the vaccination program in UP is almost exclusively for members of the UP community. Again, the idea here is to decongest the vaccination centers of the local government. On your second point, Mayor Joy Belmonte assured that they will be giving supply to the UP vaccination center as long as they will make sure that the recipients are residents or working within the city, and that national government guidelines are being followed. Such as vaccinating those under the A2 and A3 categories. Carmina?
So if you're a member of the UP community, let's say you're a professor, but you don't necessarily live in Quezon City, you're going to have to get that jab somewhere else.
And as long as you are a senior citizen or a person with comorbidity. Again, the idea here is that UP Diliman community, particularly not the UP system or other universities of the or other campuses of the university. Those who are members of the UP Diliman community are eligible for vaccination. Again, the idea is to decongest vaccination centers so that members of the UP community in Diliman do not necessarily have to go to the vaccination centers of the local government. Carmina?
Got it. So it's the community itself serving the community. Thanks a lot. Adrian Ayalin there joining us on the line. Keep safe, Adrian. Take care. Now, over in Parañaque, Philippine Vaccine Chief Carlito Galvez Jr. leads the start of COVID-19 inoculations using Sputnik V vaccines in the city. Our correspondent Vivian Gulia now joins us for an update. Viv, what more can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. Well, the line of residents here in Parañaque City for COVID vaccination is longer than usual as the city begins to roll out its doses of Sputnik V. The long queue has, in fact, occupied two levels of Ayala Mall's Manila Bay. These include health workers, senior citizens, and individuals with comorbidity for the top three priority sectors for COVID vaccination. Among the first in line was Christine Yabut, who lined up as early as 6 a.m. She says she feels lucky to have been qualified to receive Sputnik V, which has at least 91.6% efficacy. But there are also those who lined up without minding what the available vaccine brand is today. The city targets to vaccinate 2,000 residents today, and the Sputnik V doses arrived here at the mall past 9 a.m. and kept in a freezer. They are also kept inside a carrier until the vaccinee has completed the screening process. Carmina, that's because the vaccinators have 30 minutes from the time the Sputnik V is exposed to room temperature to administer the vaccine. Among the first to be vaccinated was health emergency rescuer Regulus Palma, who felt heavy on the injection side. But he says they were notified that such side effects are normal and will subside in a couple of hours or days. Louis Diaz, who also has a heart problem, felt no side effects so far. Vaccine Czar Secretary Carlito Galvez Jr. says the long line of residents wanting to get vaccinated is an indication of increasing confidence on COVID vaccines. The country is expecting 1 to 2 million doses more of Sputnik V to arrive within the month. Carmina, back to you.
Thanks a lot, Vivian Gulia there joining us live. Take care, Vivian. Keep safe. All right, moving on. President Rodrigo Duterte now among the Filipinos vaccinated against COVID-19. The president received his first dose of the shot made by China's Sinopharm Monday night. His former aide, Senator Bongo, says Duterte was cleared by his doctors to receive the jab.
Can you hear me?
Hindi ito biro. Pag tinamaan ka ng COVID, it's kamatayan. Hindi ko kayo tinatakot. Sinasabihan ko kayo. Gamitin ninyo utak ninyo. Pati ako takot. Pati ako nagsasalita ngayon. Hindi ko talaga masasabi sa inyo, mabuhay ako bukas o mamatay ako. Yan ang totoo talaga. Ako mismo nagsabi sa inyo. Hindi ako nanunungo sa ibang tao ng insulto, kaya ako sinasali ko na ang sarili ko. Pag ako ang tinamaan, there's no way, sa katanda ko, there's no way of telling whether I would live to see the light of day the following day.
Sinopharm's vaccine has not been approved for emergency use in the Philippines, but Palace spokesman Harry Roque says the jab given to the president was covered by a compassionate use permit. The president has repeatedly stated that he prefers to be inoculated with a vaccine from China. Now, the man who administered the president's COVID-19 vaccine, Health Secretary Francisco Duque III, being hailed as a hero by Mr. Duterte. The president cited supposed improvements in the country's response to the pandemic. Several sectors, including lawmakers and medical experts, has been calling for Duque's resignation over his handling of the health crisis.
Compared with other countries, which is not really the time to make comparisons, but we're doing good in the fight against COVID. And Secretary Duque is the hero there.
Can you hear me?
Prior to the pandemic, Duque was also tagged in a scam involving state insurer PhilHealth. And so there he was, the president, getting inoculated with Sinopharm, a COVID-19 vaccine that has yet to be granted emergency use authorization by the FDA. Let's get the thoughts of a former health secretary on this. Joining us now, Dr. Esperanza Cabral. Dr. Cabral, thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Carmina.
All right, let's get on with the discussion. It has yet to be granted an EUA, and yet the president chose it as a vaccine to be administered to him. What are your thoughts about this, Dr. Cabral?
Well, they say that he has been given compassionate special permit to use the vaccine. So that is a regular or legitimate way of getting a drug. So in his case, I'm glad that he finally got a COVID vaccine because he is actually in the priority list because of his age and many comorbidities.
But the compassionate special permit, isn't that supposed to be coming from a hospital that a person cannot just apply for it, doctor?
Well, it is the Secretary of Health that administered the vaccine, so I suppose there was a permit given by both the Director General of the Food and Drug Administration as well as the Secretary of Health to use the vaccine on the president. It is of consequence to them if something happens to the president. So they're fully accountable for this.
So you've got the current health secretary administering the dose himself.
Right.
Despite it not having an EUA, but having a compassionate special permit. So to you, this is on the up and up. There's nothing peculiar about this?
Well, what has happened is they have regularized the use of Sinopharm after the fact. If you remember, Carmina, the PSG members were also vaccinated with Sinopharm, according to their head of the PSG. And at that time that they gave the vaccines to the military, there was no compassionate special permit. But after the fact, the executive, the Director General of the Food and Drug Administration, provided them with this legitimate shield, you might call this, and regularized the administration of the vaccine to them. So I suppose that it is the same process of giving compassionate special permit to Dr. Duque to administer the vaccine to the president.
Dr. Cabral, having said that, what do you say then to those who have the observation that the president just made a mockery of the FDA by doing this? Why else do we go through the process when the president just does what he pleases? Doctor?
Well, this is not the first time that this has happened, and I don't think it's going to be the last.
But does that mean it's going to be, it has to be acceptable, doctor?
No, it doesn't have to be acceptable. Many people have raised eyebrows about this and have expressed their objection to destroying the institution of the Food and Drug Administration, as it were, by bypassing them because of their political power.
There's another aspect to this, Dr. Cabral, and it's the ongoing vaccination rollout. How do you think might this episode affect the hesitancy? For example, we know that the president has a lot of followers. What if they say, we want what the president had, but it's not available and the EUA hasn't been granted yet for it, doctor?
I think eventually they will, the Sinopharm manufacturers will apply for EUA and they will be granted. And I think that in the list of vaccines that are to be procured by government, Sinopharm is there. So Sinopharm is going to be one of the vaccines that will be provided. But the same thing that has been going on will continue even with Sinopharm. A person who will be getting the vaccine will have no choice as to what vaccine he or she is going to get, except for certain medical indications.
You mentioned a while ago that you think that eventually the FDA will be approving, granting an EUA for Sinopharm.
Yes.
And if that happens, how would it then not be seen as accommodating and not really regulating the use of these vaccines? Go ahead, doctor.
I think that we need to give the Food and Drug Administration the benefit of the doubt. They will be assessing the documents that will be provided by Sinopharm when it applies for emergency use utilization, and we need to give them the benefit of the doubt that they have assessed it and have approved it.
And until then, we just wait.
Yes.
All right, Dr. Esperanza Cabral, former health secretary. As always, nice to talk to you, and you keep safe. Take care.
Thank you. You too, Carmina.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Moving on, President Rodrigo Duterte urging the public to wait for aid from the government instead of going to community pantries. He warns this could lead to another spike in COVID-19 cases. The president insists government's assistance is enough. He also stands by his previous remark, calling community pantry organizers ignorant.
There are people who really do not know what they're doing. Sabi nila, we are not ignorant. May isang babae na ano. I was not referring to her. I do not even know her. I just heard it's a TV. People were swarming. It might not be the first thing that you did with your idea, but there, from there, it generated itong mga ganito. It was not meant as an insult, actually. So, hindi kasi ninyo alam. Ngayon, kasi ginawa ninyo, hindi ninyo talaga alam. Huwag na tayo magbulahan, kasi kung alam ninyo yan, hindi ninyo ginawa. The fact na ginawa ninyo, hindi ninyo alam ang consequences.
Hundreds of community pantries have sprouted across the Philippines amid a lack of government assistance and amid delays in the distribution of aid during the lockdown. But the National Task Force, make that National Anti-Communist Task Force, accused organizers of being involved with the communist movement, an accusation vehemently denied by the organizers. The Bayanihan 3 bill, which aims to provide more aid to Filipinos amid the COVID-19 pandemic, moves forward in the lower house. Part of the proposal is giving 2,000 pesos to every Filipino, regardless of social class or age. The total amount of funds for the COVID-19 financial assistance expected to reach 216 billion pesos.
There are two tranches for the ayuda for all. So it's 6,000 pesos for the first tranche. And after 3 months, there's another 6,000 pesos. If you unfortunately get COVID, there's an additional 10,000. And there are other assistance programs. So if, for example, you lost your job, there's also a provision for unemployment assistance. On top of the basic ayuda for all, then we would also have on top of that certain assistance that would be targeted for those that are more affected by the pandemic. So the obvious one would be those households with COVID.
The Bayanihan 3 bill also provides assistance to micro, small, and medium enterprises and a lifeline to the agri-fisheries sector. An infectious diseases expert sees the possibility of lockdown restrictions easing in Metro Manila and its surrounding areas within the next 2 weeks. For Dr. Ronchi Insalante, the NCR Plus could be placed under a general community quarantine after May 14 if a daily cases drop to 2,000. The Octa Research Group on Monday pointed to an 18% drop in the NCR's daily COVID-19 case average over the past week.
So nung minomonitor natin yung statement din ng Octa na by first week or second week of May na ang sa Metro Manila mag-average na lang 2,000 to 3,000. That's a good sign.
The Philippines reported 7,255 new cases Monday. This brings the total number of COVID-19 cases in the Philippines to over 1.62 million. 69,000 of those are active. 94 more died from the disease, pushing the death toll to 17,525. One of the Philippines' biggest business clubs, hoping government will loosen quarantine restrictions in the country soon to revive the economy. The Management Association of the Philippines says falling COVID-19 positivity and reproduction rates are a good sign. The situation is getting better. However, the group says the public should still follow health protocols.
Yun ang importante. Kung gusto natin magluwag talaga, kailangan lahat tayo sumunod sa health protocols. Dapat masking, face shield, tapos yung contact tracing.
There is a downtrend in COVID-19 cases here at home, but is it significant enough to decompress hospitals? And here's another thing. Remember the variant from the UK? How it was talked about as if it was a distant variant of the virus until it came here. Now, how likely is it that what's happening in India now may just happen here in the Philippines? Are we prepared enough? Let's talk to Dr. Jonas Del Rosario now. He's spokesperson of the Philippine General Hospital. Dr. Jonas, nice to see you again, and thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Carmina. Thank you for having me.
How are you?
We're good. Still busy with the COVID work in PGH. Our numbers are not yet decreasing.
We're going to talk about that later on. How are the doctors and the nurses there? Still good?
We're good. Actually, the good news is a lot of our healthcare workers who were previously infected with COVID and those who were exposed to COVID are coming back already to the hospital. Some of them have recovered. Some have finished their quarantine. So there are lesser healthcare workers now getting COVID.
Okay, let's talk about the downtrend now. That's good to hear. Do you feel it right there at the PGH? Experts pointing to a downward trend in COVID-19 cases, but do you feel it?
Well, if we just base it on our numbers, we have a 250-bed capacity, 250 beds for COVID And the highest that we went was 249, and that was about 2 weeks ago before the ECQ was put in place. And then there was a downward trend. Now we were mostly averaging in the 220s. It's still quite high. But just yesterday, the last census was 234 out of 250. So I think there's a plateauing right now. At least it's not going up. Hopefully it will continue to go down. But when we reach the number more than 200, we're quite busy. We have breached the 200 for about a month now. And so we're hoping we can go back to at least in the, 100 range or even less than 100. So it will be interesting. Now, on the other hand, I was looking at the another barometer is to see how many patients are lining up to get admitted to PGH.
Uh-huh.
We have two admissions. We have the Pei Hospital, which we have about 100 beds, and the charity part or the service wards for COVID pretty much to accept about 150 patients. So total of 250.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when both the Pei and the charity wards, the wait lists were about 80 to 100 trying to get into the hospital. Right now, the wait list for the Pei patients are only about 10, which probably is a reflection that, most of these people probably would like to go to private hospitals, the mm-hmm. bigger hospitals, the more modern hospitals. But they, during the time that there was a surge, they were going, they had no choice but to go to PGH because we do have a Pei component. But now we're seeing less of a line for our private patients. So that's probably an indication that it's easing up a little bit in the private hospital. So these people now are lining up and we're not seeing them. On the other hand, we look at the wait list of the charity patients, it's still significant. It depends. We classify our patients three types. One, those who need ICU. Mm-hmm. The second one is those who need high flow oxygen. And the third one is those who would need just low flow oxygen. ICU patients are so hard to get admitted to PGH because they cannot it's hard to transfer a patient in another hospital in an ICU setting to go to PGH because we do not have enough beds. Our ICUs are full, and a lot of our severely or moderately severe patients end up sometimes going to the ICU themselves. Mm-hmm. So in itself, we have enough patients to take care of in terms of at least severe and the critical ill.
Mm-hmm. Of course, when we talk about bed occupancy or capacity, we're not just talking about the physical bed itself, because we're going to have to talk about the meds, the equipment, the manpower that's needed there. So could an indication be as well that, you're able to care now better for patients? Does that show you that, yes, there is a downtrend because you can breathe easily now as healthcare providers as well, and you're able to really take care of the patients the way they should be taken because it's not as compressed and it's not as inflated anymore there?
Well, that's true. A very big component really is manpower. It really helped when a lot of our healthcare workers who were put on quarantine who got sick and had to isolate themselves for a while, they have gone back. Okay. Having said that, sometimes there are critical areas which need specialized nurses or doctors. Give you an example. We're having problems now with there are a lot of patients when they have severe COVID, they need dialysis,
right?
Hemoperfusion, very demanding for staff. And so there will be times when we're quite down and we could not dialyze all of them because we don't have enough nurses to do it. And so it derails and it can have an impact on the management. The other thing is the availability of ports, oxygen ports. You mentioned about equipment. Yeah. We're okay with the ventilators. We have enough. We actually have rented some more high-flow oxygen. But sometimes the limitation is the oxygen port. High-flow oxygen machines really need a certain type of oxygen system. And unfortunately, PGH, not every room is equipped to have a high-flow oxygen. And sometimes that's the reason why, even though sometimes we have a vacancy, right now it's 236 out of 250. So people will think, oh, okay, you still have about 14 or 20. Right. But you need to make sure you have the right equipment and you have the right people to take care of these patients.
Okay, let's go back to the numbers. As you said, experts are saying there is a downward trend. There are indications that you're also feeling it there at the PGH. But there's now this proposition to have GCQ in maybe 2 weeks. What do you think about that? Can you handle it?
I think I cannot prematurely tell you guys that no, we cannot do the GCQ, but we have to go by the numbers. If consistently the numbers are going down and trending downwards, well, I heard that Dr. Rogin Salate said maybe about 2,000 to 3,000 cases a day. That's where we were before the surge, really, when it reached our 200 mark. We were looking at 2,000 to 3,000. Mm-hmm. So could we actually have that? I think once we have that, reach that number, then it's probably all right to do GCQ. Everybody's concern is the gains that we have now.
Right.
By prematurely easing up on the level of quarantine might be a problem. I'm sure people are trying to balance economy and trying to make sure that people are able to work already. But we just have to learn from what happened in India, I think.
Yeah, perfect segue there, because I was just about to go to the India experience now. I'm sure you've seen the images. I'm sure you've heard and watched the reports. When you talk about the India experience, what goes into your mind?
Well, it tells you that, we do not have really a good control of the virus. The virus can outsmart us. When we think that we pretty much have solved it, this virus finds a way to go back with a vengeance. And so we really cannot, and it's been overly repeated. I'm sure sabi nila sirang plaka, you have to follow the minimal health protocols, the apat-dapat, the ventilation, having the right air ventilation, the proper distancing, physical distancing, the wearing of the face mask, and even the contact of less than 30 minutes. Those are very important things that even if we start easing up, we just have to discipline ourselves that we shouldn't be forgetting that. I think in India, there were major events that basically created a super spreader event. We want to think about it. And so we really have to be very careful. And I'm not saying not to ease up on the quarantine, because there are also other people who are very dependent on becoming more mobile, but we just have to be careful.
Mm-hmm. But aside from that, though, in terms of support infrastructure, should we be seeing the building of more quarantine facilities, more isolation facilities, hiring more health workers, just in case it hits us? Should that be what we're doing now?
I think we have to always be ready for a sudden surge. Actually, the second surge made us realize that after handling this COVID for a year, we did not learn so much of what has happened for a year. It was the same issue, manpower, room. I see the hospitals. I mean, I wish we had already over, after about a year, had built like a Wuhan type of hospital, sort of like absorbing this COVID patients, wherein we can centralize the resources. People will be going in there with the intention of taking care of COVID, instead of like so many hospitals trying to accommodate a little bit of people getting COVID, and some of them are not even experts in taking care of this problem, and so they're forced to take in because there's we just do not have enough facilities to take care of them.
Mm. So that's what should be done now, because do you believe, Doc Jonas, that this is going to be the last of the surges that we'll be seeing?
I don't think so. You already know that the longer that this virus stays and the longer that it gets transmitted, mutation happens and so the surges will be, it's probably going to be like an ebb and tide. You will have surges and you have to dance with it. But what I'm saying is the next time we have a surge, we should be more prepared.
Mm. You say we have to dance with it. And so we better prepare that dance floor just in case another music plays. Dr. Jonas Del Rosario there. Always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks, as always, for all that you do. You keep safe.
You keep safe, too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a break now. Coming up, President Rodrigo Duterte denies making a campaign promise on the Philippines' maritime dispute with China. More on that when we come back. Dateline Philippines will return after the break. Stay with us here on ANC. We are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Metro Manila residents begin receiving Russia's Sputnik V COVID-19 jabs. President Rodrigo Duterte gets inoculated with China's Sinopharm shot. Former Health Secretary Esperanza Cabral says Health Secretary Francisco Duque III and the FDA are now liable if something happens to the president after getting vaccinated with an unauthorized jab. An infectious diseases expert sees the possibility of further downgrading the modified lockdown in Metro Manila after May 14. And President Duterte denies making any campaign promises on Manila's maritime dispute with Beijing. Back with more news. The COVID-19 variant from the UK is now the most dominant strain. In Baguio City, Baguio Mayor and Philippine Contact Tracing Chief Benjamin Magalong says the city logged more than 100 cases of the UK variant. That's contrary to the figures presented by the Philippine Genome Center.
Officially, lumalabas na 17 UK variants lang ang na-detect ng PGC based on the specimen na sinabito namin. At tandaan nun ninyo, napakarami ho nating specimen na pinadala ho doon coming from the city of Baguio. At less than 20% lang ho na process.
Magalong says hospitals in the city are operating at full capacity, but he sees no need to put Baguio under the stricter modified enhanced community quarantine. Baguio now has more than 1,000 active COVID-19 cases, with a total of over 10,700 infections. The Philippine government revises its contact tracing target from 1:37. The ratio went down to just 1:15. Despite the lowered number, contact tracing chief Benjamin Magalong believes the new target is still a long shot. As of last week, the contact tracing ratio in the National Capital Region was at 1:5. Magalong says the Philippines' contact tracing capabilities still remain as the country's weakest link in its pandemic response.
Well, we're just trying to be realistic about it. While our previous standard is 1:37, hindi ho talaga kayang abutin. Napag-usapan na po namin yan sa NTF, napag-usapan na rin po namin yan ng mga interagency during our meeting. At napag-agreehan po namin na kailangan ibaba natin to be, let us look at the current operating environment. Yung 1:15 pa rin ho, malaking bagay pa rin ho yan. Malaki pa rin ho ang impact po yan sa ating pag-manage ng COVID-19.
Magalong, meanwhile, says the health department rejected staysafe.ph as the country's standard contact tracing app. That's despite the government's previous announcement all offices and businesses will be required to use it.
Talaga hong tinanggihan ho ng Department of Health dahil may nakita ho silang kakulangan. So, nangyari po ay i-denunate po to sa DILG. Right na ho, pinapag-aralan po ng DILG. Kulang pa ho yung documentation na ibinigay po ng StaySafe. Kaya hindi pa ho natin makompleto at masabing categorically na highly reliable na po itong StaySafe. Ang claim ho kasi ng Department of Health, kulang pa ho kanilang pag-aaral. Kumbaga ho sa isang bahay, ang gusto ho kasi ng Department of Health, ibigay mo yung susi ng bahay, pasukin namin yung bahay, inspekin namin kung nakita namin na maayos yung bahay at yung mga facilities ng bahay, saka namin tatanggapin. Sabi naman ng Stay Safe, pwede ho ba na ibigay ho namin muna yung, i-turn over na lang ho namin bago namin ibigay sa inyo yung susi at saka nyo inspekin.
The Philippine Science and Technology Department assuring the public there will be no bias in the clinical trials of the anti-parasitic drug ivermectin. Dr. Jaime Montoya says the trials will study the drug's efficacy in preventing mild or asymptomatic COVID-19 patients from getting severe illness. The clinical trials are set to begin by the end of May.
The fact that we are doing research means that we want to answer the question of whether it will be of benefit to Filipino patients. Remember that the studies that have been done are done in other countries, and we don't know. Maybe it will be the case, but maybe not, that our response may be different or the same as the people who were included in the trials in the other countries. We are neutral. We are not for or against to use ivermectin for COVID. What we are doing is in fact to answer that question.
Meanwhile, the Philippine College of Physicians warns the public against using ivermectin. The group says it may have side effects such as nausea, stomach pain, sudden drops in blood pressure, and liver damage. It also tells member doctors who recommend the drug they will be called out.
We have actually seen a number of Filipinos who got COVID-19 despite using ivermectin. And in fact, not only getting infected with COVID-19, but the COVID-19 that they got became really serious, that they are coming to the hospital with severe COVID-19. And then there are also a number of Filipinos who took ivermectin and came to the hospital because of the side effects.
The World Health Organization seeking to fill the gaps left in the COVAX facility after COVID-19 ravaged India suspended exports for AstraZeneca's drug. The WHO says it is in talks with various donors, including the United States. It, however, notes there is still no definite date for the resumption of the vaccine exports from India.
And so it would be really helpful to get AZ doses from other countries in Europe and beyond. We're also talking to the United States, who has committed to sharing their 60 million doses of AstraZeneca vaccine that they have, and we're hoping that that would also flow through COVAX to help not only India but other countries as well. And finally, we're also talking to Moderna, which just received the emergency use listing, and there is a deal that's being signed with them for 500 million doses, but this would start in the second half of the year and continue through 2022.
India's COVID-19 case count is expected to surpass 20 million Tuesday. In other news, President Rodrigo Duterte denying making any campaign promises on the sea dispute with China. In a speech Monday night, Duterte said dealing with China's latest incursions in Philippine waters would have to be done through diplomacy. However, Duterte's statement runs contrary to his famous remark during a 2016 presidential debate where he said he would ride a jet ski to plant a Philippine flag on the Spratly Islands. Duterte later clarified that his jet ski remark was only a hyperbole.
I never, never in my campaign as president promised the people that I would retake the West Philippine Sea. I did not promise that I would pressure China. I never mentioned about China and the Philippines in my campaign because that was a very serious matter. We need to have a diplomatic tokatis dyan. Eh, hindi ako dyan. Munan dyan sa ating foreign affairs. Trabaho nila yan.
Duterte also hurled insults at the former Philippine government officials who earlier accused him of not protecting the country's interests in Philippine waters.
Kung itong Albert na ito, ako pa ang sinisisi. Pero makita kita, suntukin kita. Buang ka. O kung mapakialam man, ako ang nakialam na pagdating ko, nandiyan na yung barko ng China. Ang atin ang wala. Ito si Carpio, tumaba na ng gusto. Walang ginawa kung hindi magdadaan, tumahimik ka nga. Tapos madaldada ako, nagamura. Eh, bakit? Ganun naman talaga ako.
For an international studies professor, anything that the Philippine Foreign Affairs Department says or does against China will not hold water because of President Duterte's contrasting statements. Professor Renato De Castro's remark comes after Foreign Affairs Secretary Teodoro Locsin Jr. told Beijing to get out of the Philippine Sea in an expletive-laced tweet. De Castro notes both statements only showed a divided government without a coherent strategy and a clear foreign policy on China. He also says China will only take the Philippines seriously if Manila taps ally countries such as the U.S., Australia, and Japan.
The best action that this government could take at this point in time is to rely on our alliance and our security partners. But what is basically the policy of this entire government? You have the visiting forces agreement been abrogated last year, although it's been renewed every 6 months. Then, of course, you have the non-implementation of the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement with the United States. Our allies are confused. They simply don't know who is basically setting out the policy. Of course, they would like to deal with the Secretary of Foreign Affairs. They would like the Defense Department to push through with a renegotiated or at least with a stable visiting force agreement. But once we deal with policy, once we deal at the top, there's simply confusion.
At his regular press briefing today, Duterte spokesman Harry Roque said Locsin has apologized to Chinese Ambassador Wang Qilian for his expletive-laden tweet. The group of seven Western democracies aims to court new allies to counter challenges from China and Russia. That's according to U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and British Foreign Minister Dominic Raab ahead of the first in-person G7 foreign ministers meeting since 2019. But the two leaders maintain that aim will be pursued without holding Beijing down and while pushing for more stable ties with Moscow.
It is not our purpose to try to contain China or to hold China down. What we are trying to do is to uphold the international rules-based order that our countries have invested so much in over so many decades to the benefit, I would argue, not just of our own citizens, but of people around the world, including, by the way, China.
The door for positive relations and diplomacy is always open to us, and I think that's something shared across many of the NATO countries. But what's got to change is Russia's behaviour against, as a P5 member of the Security Council, against the basic norms of international law, whether it's the brinkmanship and the saber-rattling on the border with Ukraine, whether it's the cyber attacks and the misinformation, or indeed the poisoning of Alexei Navalny, which was not just a human rights abuse, but a chemical use of chemical weapons on Russian soil.
Violence escalating in Myanmar. A local media there reporting that five died from a blast caused by a parcel bomb. Among the victims, an ousted lawmaker allied with Aung San Suu Kyi and three police officers who had joined a civil disobedience movement opposing military rule. Violence has spiraled in Myanmar since the February 1 coup, with at least 766 civilians reported killed by security forces. Ethnic militias, meanwhile, have backed opposition to the junta, launching attacks on government and military facilities. On Monday, local media reported an ethnic rebel group shot down a military helicopter while a junta-appointed local administrator had been stabbed to death in Yangon. Billionaires Bill and Melinda Gates ending their nearly 30 years of marriage in a divorce announcement that is rocking the world of philanthropy. Here's the full story.
One of the world's most powerful and wealthiest couples have decided to call it quits, sending shockwaves through the world of philanthropy. Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates and his wife Melinda Gates on Monday released a joint statement saying, quote, "After a great deal of thought and a lot of work on our relationship, we have made the decision to end our marriage." They added, "We no longer believe we can grow together as a couple in the next phase of our lives. We ask for space and privacy for our family as we begin to navigate this new life." The two, who have been married for 27 years, are co-chairs and trustees of their nonprofit Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which launched in the year 2000. The foundation, which focuses on public health, currently has over $51 billion in assets, according to a tax filing cited by CNBC, giving it vast influence and reach the world over. The couple have three children. The financial details of their decision to split were not immediately clear. But they said in their statement that they would both continue their work at the foundation. Gates dropped out of Harvard to co-found Microsoft, making him a billionaire many times over. Gates stepped down from the Microsoft board in March 2020 to focus on philanthropy. Their split comes 2 years after another billionaire, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, said that he and his then-wife Mackenzie were getting divorced. Mackenzie Scott has since become one of the richest women in the world and one of the most generous philanthropic donors.
On to some sports action now before we go. The Washington Wizards continue their strong run heading into the NBA's postseason. The Wizards dropped 154 points in a win against the Indiana Pacers. Russell Westbrook had himself an epic triple-double, finishing with 14 points, 21 rebounds, and a tying career-high 24 assists. As a team, Washington recorded a franchise record 50 assists. Indiana and Washington ranked 9th and 10th in the Eastern Conference, good for slots in the play-in tournament. EBA storekeeper Ravenna joins the ranks of elite athletes endorsing Jordan Brand. The Nike subsidiary, named after NBA legend Michael Jordan, made the announcement Tuesday. Ravenna is the first Filipino to join Jordan Brand. Among its endorsers are NBA superstars Luka Doncic, Zion Williamson, and Jason Tatum. In a statement, the former Ateneo star said he is honored, adding he idolized Jordan when he was growing up. Before establishing himself as a top flight make-that-flight talent in the PBA, Ravenna won two UAAP seniors basketball titles and won league MVP twice. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, you guys. Keep it here on ANC.